If this is your first time here, welcome. During our shows, we interview successful entrepreneurs and investors to spread knowledge, advice, and actionable tactics to help others in the pursuit of financial freedom. We discuss successes, failures, systems, motivations, experiences, and key lessons learned along the way in the hopes that these stories help you along your journey. Tune in every Wednesday to get your weekly juice. If you've been here before and like what you've been hearing, please subscribe, share with friends, rate, and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. That goes an extremely long way for us. It's simple. Just click on your podcast app, type in our podcast name, The Weekly Juice, click on the reviews, and let us know what you think. The more ratings we get, the more eyes we'll get on our show, and in turn, we'll be able to provide you all with high-quality guests. You can also find us on Instagram, at Weekly Juice Pod, for daily content and personal finance tips to assist in your journey towards financial freedom. Welcome back to The Weekly Juice. As always, Ryan and Corey here with another episode for you. Today is episode 41. We have on Dave Arlod and RV Karkanji. They are a real estate investing couple that specialize out of Nashville, Tennessee. They also have some rentals in Buffalo, New York, part of Bill's Mafia. They have a unique story of finding off-market deals, flipping, and they tell the story of how they went from zero to $500,000 in net worth in 1 year. Absolutely incredible story.
Yep. They get it. They have like a really cool social media thing where they like walk through their rehabs and they talk about how they just like, they're 24 and 25. Did we even mention that? Like they're so young and they just jumped into real estate and they are doing wholesaling, wholetailing, flips. And they have like three exit strategies on how to get in and out of each deal. So these are people that if you want to like start, like how do you get your start? How do you figure it out? Like what networking groups to go to? They have mentors that they paid for and that they're working for them. They're returning on their investment. So it was a really good episode. Really, really good episode. And the bad boys are back. Let's go.
Bad boys of FI, welcome you to the Weekly Juice. Well, Dave and RV, officially welcome to the Weekly Juice. We're thrilled to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, guys. We're so excited.
Very welcome. So if you could kind of give our listeners a little background on yourself, where you're from, what you do, and kind of how you got into entrepreneurship and real estate.
You want me to go first? Yeah, you can go. So I'm RV. I started in real estate right out of college. I was actually living in Buffalo, New York. Right now we're actually in Nashville, Tennessee. It was like my last year of college and I was debating whether going into master's and trying to find a job in the corporate world. And I decided to just continue my master's while I wasn't still sure what I wanted to do. And while doing my master's degree, I was applying for jobs. So I was trying to get, you know, something, kind of get my foot in the door. And, you know, I probably applied to over 100 jobs and I didn't get any responses back. And, you know, super upset. I didn't know what to do. So I had a conversation with my dad about it. And he actually brought it to my mind. You know, he said, why don't you look into real estate? And I was like, well, what is there in real estate for me to do? Like get my license? I need money. I can do anything. And he's like, no, I've heard of people, you know, you can flip houses or try to, you know, buy it and sell it right away where you don't need a lot of money. So he got it in my head. I started looking up online and one day I was driving my car and I heard for 3 days of free seminar in real estate investing. So I just decided to join it from the radio. I went there and I was kind of like mind blown. And that's where they upsell you on another, you know, 3 day seminar.
Yes, you bought it.
Yes. I bought it without his permission. At the time it was like $300. So it was like a big deal for us because we didn't really
have. Yeah, imagine we're in college, you know, living in like a, that's a decent apartment. Yeah. And $300 at that time in college, that's a decent chunk. And
that's food for the week.
That's all semester's money.
Oh, yeah, true. Exactly.
So, you know, he got super mad at me and I was like, listen, I think this is going to be great. Just trust me on it. And one thing and another ended up working out, thank God.
Yeah, so I started basically 1 year after her. Straight out of college, I took a job as a coach in Florida. I was a coach there for 1 year in Florida. And she had two flips going on at the same time. And she was struggling with the flips of managing contractors. Yeah. And she really asked me one time, like, hey, just Kate, please come help me for 1 week. So I came down there for 1 week, and
that was like a big club.
And I got everything. I got everything going, and soon after that, I realized like, hey, I got to leave my job. Like, I couldn't have her like being in that situation. And it was honestly the best decision I made to kind of join the real estate side, because now we're literally doing a lot of deals every year, every month, basically. And we do everything when it comes to wholesale, flips, hotels, short-term rentals, long-term rentals. So kind of me moving to back to Buffalo, New York was really like a stepping stone for our business.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So it sounds like you kind of parlay your skill set off of each other really well. I want to talk about your portfolio right now, like what it looks like right now, and then we can kind of go backwards and talk about how we got there. So what's your current portfolio look like? And I guess what's your main niche right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have two rentals that we have still in Buffalo, New York, and it's a duplex and a single family. And then this year and last year, pretty much our main focuses were to just flip and build capital, because that's what we were lacking. And our goal actually for 2021 is to just buy as many rentals as we can and add to our rental portfolio.
Okay, cool.
But our niche, I would say our niche is basically, I would say flips
and wholesale.
And wholesale. Mm-hmm. That's what we specialize in, because when it comes to wholesale, we actually do our own marketing. We don't rely on other companies. We focus on that, and we're trying to scale. Definitely 2021, we're trying to scale that business.
Can you talk about how you went from zero to 500,000 in 1 year?
Absolutely. So the first year where he mentioned, you know, I was struggling with the two flips. I bought two properties. I was still in Buffalo, New York. And then after I did those two flips, I bought a third one. And these were all through the MLS. So I didn't really have a lot of negotiation power in my hands. You know, going through agents and having like other competition as well. So I was relying on that. And then this year when we moved to Nashville in January, actually, we both decided, you know, this is the time to really like just triple down and just work hard to go direct to seller, do our own marketing. And honestly, just by being consistent and doing marketing, you know, being focused on direct to seller, that's literally how it went. We just kept getting deal after deal and scaling to the point where we hired in the full-time acquisitions manager to work for us. And then, you know, at the end of the year, we ended up grossing 500,000.
Yeah.
That's great. That's great. So I guess just to paint the picture for our listeners. So you originally both had full-time jobs, or actually RV, it sounds like you came right out of school, right? But Dave had a full-time job as a coach, and you realized that you kind of were onto something here as RV was working on your flips. Yeah. And you said, okay, we're going to make this, we're going to turn it from just something that we're doing. And I saw this on your Instagram, so turning it from a hobby to a business. Can you talk about, we mentioned parlaying the skill sets. I'm sure that both of you carry different aspects out of the business. Can you talk about how that works and what each of your roles are as you try to grow the business?
Yeah, absolutely. And let me just point out that this was not easy for us when we started working together. we had a great relationship before, you know, as a couple, but actually working together was completely different. We were button heads on a lot of things. You know, we didn't know what our skill set was at first, because he didn't really have experience in construction either, you know, and I didn't in real estate on the other side. So it was a lot of trial and error. But kind of like we started separating and finding out what works best for each of us. And, you know, for Dave, it's mostly being involved in the construction side and kind of handling flips when we're doing those, talking to contractors, literally anything when it comes to flips. I'm kind of in charge of bringing in the deals and the leads and like doing the marketing, kind of basically the before the flip, you know, trying to get it under contract.
Got it. And then Dave does a lot of the construction yourself. Are you a general contractor, or are you actually doing a lot of the work yourself?
Here's the thing. When we first lived in Buffalo, before we started doing off-market deals, I was doing most of the work myself. Mm-hmm. The main reason why is because the profit margin wasn't there. And also because I wanted to learn firsthand what it takes to flip a house. And I also wanted to see what a good contractor is and what a bad contractor is. So that's where I get a lot of my experience from. So, and also the system we have right now is that she provides the leads. The acquisition manager goes to the appointments, takes the pictures and everything. I look at the pictures. I analyze it to see how if there is a what the rehab budget is. Mm-hmm. And I look up the comps. We double check our comps at all times. That goes back to her. And then we kind of decide what we're going to do with the property. Usually we have three exit strategies, wholesale, flip, or hotel.
Awesome. So I think it's a really interesting dynamic here because, and I think people would be really interested to hear how this works. So you're a coach, Dave. Do you have any prior experience in terms of like how flips, estimating rehabs, any of this stuff works? I think you might be living proof that as long as you want to find out how it works, you can. How did you figure out how to get involved? And like, you know, it's one thing to say you're going to do it, but to estimate a flip is not easy. What did you do?
What did I do? So here's the thing. She basically bought the house and then told me I bought the house.
So you didn't have a choice. Okay.
You didn't have a choice. But I tell people all the time, the best way I learned is by making mistakes. Not necessarily I'm going out there. Okay. I'm going to make mistakes. No, I went there, gave my all, for example, drywall. I gave my all to do it the right way, but I had to bring in contractors after me and to fix it. So that's, I think, the best way I learned when it comes to construction, because I didn't have that much experience. And my dad was kind of handy with tools, so I helped around on the house. But getting a rehab done, a full rehab done, definitely had no experience doing that.
Right. And we learned through some of our beginning flips. Actually, that's how we decided to keep a couple of them as rentals, because our budget, you know, went way over. I mean, obviously, it was good on the rental side as well, but we just decided to do that.
So aside from diving in, like hands-on, just failing fast often and going through the motions, what other resources did you both lean on to essentially gain knowledge and then be able to put it into action?
When it comes to like the whole, like the rehab side of
just real estate in general. Like, I mean, you can talk about, like, we could talk about estimating rehab costs, but just analyzing the numbers, finding deals, like there's a whole scheme for this thing. And when I'm just thinking of brand new investors, where can they start?
So I'll tell you like how I started. Honestly, like I said in the beginning, was that 3-day real estate seminar, but that was just kind of like an overall. It didn't give me any specifics on how to analyze anything. You know, it was just like mindset mostly than anything else. So I just went to where a lot of people turn to, which is YouTube. I bought a lot of books related to real estate, and one that I can particularly think that really helped me is the E-Myth with the real estate investing like section or book. And I read that, you know, it had a lot of good tips on there and how to do it as a business.
You can't see it, but
yeah.
E-Myth by Michael Gerber.
Yes, that one.
Is there one focused on real estate? There's this book that's specific.
There is one. So that's the one I bought, the one that was focused specifically on real estate investing. And that one really helped me a lot to comprehend a lot of things around real estate. And then from there, you know, I just kind of kept finding people on YouTube, like Max Maxwell, you know, all these other people that were doing it before me. And just honestly, it was all out of like bits and pieces from everybody. And I just tried to plug it in like to what fit with me, with my personality. And then in terms of like actual analyzing deals.
That's awesome. Let's talk about a little bit about your niche. I know that it's cool that you have a multiple ways to get out of deals. I'm wondering if you're willing to break down, like pick a specific deal. Mm-hmm. Maybe you have something in the back of your head and just talk about maybe the before price, you know, the rehab cost, and then what it appraised for, and then what you ended up doing with it, whether you wholesaled it or whether you kept it as a rental or whether you flipped it. Can you just maybe pick one and walk our listeners through a specific project?
I'll tell you this, just like before anything else, whenever I get a property or I'm trying to analyze a deal, I make sure that if, for example, I don't wholesale it, I make sure that it's a deal that I would want to keep either as a flip or as a rental. Just because I don't want to have the reputation of there enough as a business that, you know, I'm putting things under contract and if they don't sell to a wholesaler, then I'm just dropping them out. But in terms of a deal, I guess I'll talk about a recent wholesale deal that I did. This lead came through direct mail that I sent out. It was about an hour away from Nashville where I live. I'm trying to reach out to the lady, and she actually said that she doesn't want another cash buyer because she already had two out there. They gave her an offer. and it was way too low than what she wanted. So try to, you know, kind of bring it back here and agreeing with her, you know, I understand that. And I told her, you know, if you let me know what the cash offer is, was from them, I can try to do a little bit of research online and see if I can either match it or maybe even offer more. So she told me it was around like 76,000. I did some research online and, you know, obviously I hadn't seen the property at this point, but I told her that, you know, just by looking at my numbers on here, I can probably offer you around 116, depending on how much work you need. So she's like, all right, cool. Went out to the property. Well, actually my acquisitions manager went out there, took some pictures, came back, and our actual offer was around $96,000, which she gladly accepted. And then our numbers looked like, you know, the ARV was 320 on that property. It did need a lot of work. I think it was around 70 to 75,000. And again, so what I do with my properties is the first thing I try to see if it's a good wholesale deal. If I don't wholesale it for some reason, then again, you know, I'll keep it and flip it. So I send it out to my buyers list. I got a lot of pushback. For some reason, you know, some buyers just were not either the area or I'm not sure what it was about this one, but we got a lot of pushback that, you know, it wasn't a good deal and this and that. So I tried to lower my price a little bit. And actually I sent it out at 160 on the wholesale side. So I lowered my price. Again, nobody reached out. So I kind of talked to Dave about it and I said, it was kind of making me doubt my numbers. But I rechecked everything and everything was still great. So I was like, Dave, you know, we'll just keep it, flip it. It's still going to be a good profit for us. And then it was like 4 days before closing, I got a buyer reach out to me and say, you know, I'm interested in this one. Are you still selling it? And I still was, you know, I said, give me an offer. He gave me an offer at 150 and I wholesaled it for 150 and we closed like 4 days later. So I made about like 50,000 in terms of a wholesale fee there. So it was a good turnout.
Yeah. Without having to do any of the rehab, like that's right.
That ain't bad. Not bad at all. So this is interesting. We haven't like took a deep dive into wholesaling in general. I'm wondering if you wouldn't mind going that route. And I know you also mentioned wholesaling. So I want to touch on that after, but just in general, like how are you finding these wholesaling deals? And then how do you know, like, it's very interesting. How do you know that this is going to be a wholesale deal versus I want to keep this versus I want to flip this? Like the profit margins and kind of walking through, is it a gut feeling? Are you analyzing strict numbers? I know I'm going everywhere there.
Yeah. So in the beginning where, you know, our capital and we couldn't be so picky, we obviously, you know, try to go for the biggest exit strategy, which was flipping for us, you know, to try to make the most money. However, you know, as we were getting more deals, obviously I couldn't afford to get everything all at once. And we also didn't want to be overwhelmed. So we started to analyze deals in terms of wholesaling. So we utilized the strategy of 75% of ARV. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with it, but it's 75% of ARV minus repairs. And then if you're trying to wholesale it another, you know, you discount whatever you want the fee to be. So for us, it's always a $10,000 fee, like minimally. So that's what we do in terms of analyzing the deals. And even when I try to keep it as a flip, I still put that $10,000 discount just because, you know, if for some reason I can't keep it, I want to wholesale it. I want to make sure that I can. And if I don't want to wholesale it, then I got another nice cushion, you know, on the flipping side.
Yeah, the decision is basically also made on location, right. Location and how many flips or projects we have going on at that time. So let's say we have about two flips going on at that time. The third project, we're definitely going to wholesale it because that doesn't make any sense for us to have three properties going on at the same time. But the profit on the flip is usually around 50 to 60K. If it's less than that, we regularly try to turn it into a rental. If it's more than that, this might be a hotel deal as well. Mm-hmm. And that's where the hotel deal comes in. The hotel deal, the market is so hot right now that usually sometimes we take a property, you just clean it out. Sometimes don't even clean it out and put it right back on the market. And so far we have gotten a lot of success with that. Within the first week, we've always received multiple offers on all of our properties without even touching it.
So you get it. So you find a property, you get it under contract, and then you're just simply relisting it for a higher price. And if someone reaches out to you, you can either say, hey, we're going to wholesale. And then you have your $10,000 minimum fee. But you made 50 on your other one. Let's just talk about that. What's wholesaling and like what's the difference?
I'm gonna give you a perfect example of a deal we just closed today. is going on today, actually. And it's a profit, the net profit is 130K on this deal. We bought it for 100. The lady was really desperate and she wanted to sell really quick. And this deal is about 3 hours away. We bought it for 100 and we decided that is the best just to list it because the ARV on this house is probably 450,000 and we got it for 100. So in the back of our heads, we were like, if we flip it, if we put money into it, we could get 450 out of it. But if we just put it on the market right now, we can get an easy 130, 140K. So basically a hotel is you buy it the same way as you run your numbers on a wholesale.
Or
a
flip.
Or a flip. But you take that property and you check the market. Because sometimes the market appreciates so fast that if you list it the same way, you could probably make 30 to 40,000 on it without even touching it.
And are you finding these deals strictly on the MLS or do you have an agent? I guess your whole strategy is off-market deals. So how are you finding them exactly?
So we have three ways we market like to sellers. It's either direct mail or online ads, you know, through Google or Facebook marketing. Those are our main three. Actually, this year we're trying to add cold calling in our marketing as well, but we haven't done that yet.
Good luck, Dave.
we're actually going to hire
them. I'm going to train somebody. I'm looking for somebody and I'm going to train them because cold call is definitely volume. And I tried it.
We did try it in the beginning.
It's tough. I started my sales career there. So it's not for the faint of heart, I'll say the least. And you're already making incredible profit margins. So I think you can escape that. I'm thinking about, I cut you off about, you're talking about finding the deals.
No, those were the three main.
Basically what we're doing is we're trying to find people with motivation. Every people we try to target, they have some type of motivation to sell.
Divorce, tax liens, probate, you know, MLS expired listings, absentee owners that have owned for a long time, vacant properties. Honestly, anything that can like kind of scream motivation. And I think a lot of people get wrong in real estate investing is that it's very rare that you're going to find somebody like really, really desperate to sell like we did with this lady. Most of the time, you're just going to deal with people that want to sell and they're reasonable and open to your offers and they just don't want to go the market route.
We've heard so many times that, you know, we'll be interviewing someone and we handpick random people and they're like, oh yeah, you know, these deals, they're hard to come by, but everyone seems to have one of these deals, like these magical deals that give you 100K or 50K. So like they're out there. I think it's important for people to realize like the harder you work, you're going to create your own luck and they're going to come across your way. So first of all, congratulations. That's a huge profit margin. I'm pretty jacked up for you.
Thank you.
Pretty awesome. Now, if you could just go into the direct mail campaign, like the strategy, because I've heard from people that they use a specific platform to generate their leads. And then they send out a specific letter, you know, whatever has specific content in there and specific color, specific ink. And then I'm just wondering if you can kind of, I don't give away your whole strategy, but just an idea of how someone can get involved. They're like, wow, this is a great idea. Maybe I want to wholesale as opposed to, you know, doing a flip or a buy and hold.
Yeah. So disclaimer before I put it out there, every market is different. And honestly, you know, what could work for my market could be completely different for yours. However, what we're doing, what we found a lot of success with is actual handwritten letters with a pen. I know a lot of companies that do direct mail, they'll say it's handwritten, but it's actually like computer printed type font. But I'm talking about like real pen. And, you know, the national market we're at is pretty competitive, like a lot of markets out there. So we try to do our best to stand out and, you know, kind of give them a reason to at least pick up the phone and call us. Because once we have their phone number, then we have, you know, like the power per se to call them, follow up until they tell us not to. So our main thing is just honestly postcards with handwritten actual like pen. Postcards.
And we keep it kind of short too as well, because we're trying to just envision you getting something in the mail. If it looks like a long letter, I don't know a lot of people that are going to read through the whole letter, but it's just simple. People just grasp on the most important thing. And the most important thing is I'm willing to buy a property for cash. That's always that we have in our letters. Sometimes we change up the words a little bit, but people grasp to that in a short sentence. So that's what
it's literally like 2 to 3 sentences that just says, you know, dear homeowner, we actually put their actual names, you know, we're interested in purchasing your 123 Main Street property for cash. If you have an interest to get an offer, give us a call, you know, at this number.
This is interesting. So you're mentioning for cash, and I think a lot of people are like, ah, I'm out. I don't have cash yet. So did you both essentially do a couple flips to accumulate this cash and then you were able to go this route? Or is it even possible to send an email or a letter out to someone and buy their property through a mortgage or something like that?
When we first got started, we had two flips originally. The profit that we made off that wasn't that much, but the profit we made off that, we literally decided enough is enough when it comes to these low margins, right, when it comes to flips off the MLS. So we literally put everything we had into marketing, yeah, and hoping that we would land some deals. And that started growing, and we started putting more money into right, marketing.
But even now that we have way more capital than what we did when we started, we go through private lenders. Even if I have all the cash to buy the property, I choose not to, because I'd like to have some type of cash reserves for, you know, maybe a property goes over budget and, you know, something else, you know, all those business expenses kind of ramp up. So I always want to have some cash reserves in my account. But honestly, even when we didn't have money, it was all through private lenders and hard money lenders.
And the last one for me, because I'm sure Corey has a bunch, going just last thing on the direct mail strategy. So you said you're using Google AdWords and a few other things to send out to get your list. I'm just curious, like, is there a specific program? Like, how are you, how would you find out that I'm a motivated seller that I want to sell you my property and just get out of it? Like, specifically with this lady that just tried to get out.
Yeah. So we utilize like three kind of list providers per se. PropStream, I don't know if you guys heard of it. It's a great way and very simple way to get started. You just click a few things on there, you know, what you want, like tax liens or have an active lien or something like that, and they'll pull the list for you. There's also ListSource, which is a little bit more expensive. And then we also do County Records. Now, obviously, when we got started, County Records is not something we did. We just went the easy way out, like a lot of people do. So we just went with PropStream, but we still use PropStream to this day, and it's very profitable for us.
That's great. I noticed there was a distinction, or I wanted to make a distinction about what you said earlier. And I think a lot of people might look at you buying a property for $90,000 and then wholesaling it or wholetailing it for 150. Some people might look at that as like, well, you're taking advantage of somebody. And I look and I personally, the point that I want to make is that you never know what type of position someone's in, right? This yeah. person, you're solving their problem. They really want to get out of this property. You're actually coming to the rescue, so to speak. So the fact that the market's so hot, there's just so many ways to make money right now. And I think that it's important for people to realize, like, this offer that you made, whether it was 90, 110, this was saving them. This was helping this person get out of this deal. And I think that I'm surprised to hear that there's even that type of margin in wholesaling. I've heard of people going in and trying to make $5,000 to $10,000. So I think that's a really, really cool strategy. And the fact that you're able to make a flip margin on a wholesaler wholetail is like, it's incredible.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, like you said, we were solving a problem from that lady. She actually texted me after our closing and she was like, you know, I'm so thankful you guys came in and were able to offer more than the other people. And we're just so happy to get rid of this property. So honestly, for everybody, it's a win-win.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really important for people to realize is that you never know. It's hard and you don't want to judge the situations that people are in, but if someone's trying to sell their home and you can solve a problem and it can be a win-win for both people, like that, you know, that's the name of the game.
Yeah. And I just wanted to touch real quick on the second part of what you said. For us, wholesaling, you know, obviously we got to make money on it and we make sure to tell people that, you know, we're real estate investors. We have to make some money to run it as a business. And we also want to, you know, make profits on it. So they know upfront that we're making some money on it. I mean, they don't know maybe the full amount, but they know we're still being profitable off of it.
They never know the full amount when we wholesale.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, there's a little bit of, you know, there's the game being played there and that's totally understandable. Right. I want to talk about, you mentioned private lending. I want to talk about structuring these deals because there's a notion that when you get into real estate, you have to have a lot of money, right? Yeah. Now, we talk about this on a couple podcasts, a couple interviews, is that I don't think you can invest as a real estate investor if you're broke, but that doesn't mean you have to use your own money, right? So how did you develop relationships with these private lenders, and how did you find them? How did you get them to trust you to move forward doing deals with you?
Yeah. So honestly, before Corona, because now it's a little bit different, but before COVID, I was going to every real estate meetup there was. And a lot of times, or I would say sometimes, you know, it's a bit of a waste of time, you know, trying to talk to people and this and that. But that's where I've made most of my connections. I'd probably say like 99 of my connections in everything related to real estate, whether it's another buyer or wholesaler, private lender. I found all my private lenders through networking to these meetings. Everybody goes there to network and try to find some type of relationship and a win-win. And, you know, you just find them there.
And the extra thing we did, we created a packet, like a credibility packet, showing our vision of the company and where we're trying to go with it. And that's basically, so that's available in our bio for free. Yeah, so if anybody that is interested in getting that packet, you can literally go to our bio and get that for free. So you can get started with that as well. So yeah, our lenders, it's basically confidence, because we sent it out to a lender and he looked at it. And he said, I want to see the house. I want to see the property. I want to see the contractor as well. And that's me. And barely have done any flips. So I didn't lie, but I really came off with confidence knowing that I know what I'm doing. And I think that's the key with anything in real estate, is just having confidence. If you're going to doubt yourself for a little bit, it's not going to work. Just have that confidence.
That's great. It's really good advice. I'm actually reading, I believe it's Matt Faircloth's book, Raising Private Capital. I think that's the.
Do I have to pull up this again? I have like all these Bibles.
Yeah. I'm listening to it on audiobook because I can't actually read. But and it was talking about structuring these deals and how you make sure that the private money lender knows that you're running the deal. Is there a dynamic that you have there where, Dave, you mentioned that the private money lender wants to come to the property. They want to do all these things. Is there a line that you draw to say, look, we need each other in this deal. You're going to provide the money, but the decisions get made by you two. So is there any sort of dynamic there that you can explain when people are looking for private money lenders?
So honestly, we haven't really encountered that a lot. Everybody that we talked about bringing private lenders, they've just been interested on the passive side. Now, yeah, I want to come to the property, make sure that I'm not lying them to the type of property that I'm buying. But they've never asked us, honestly, regarding any like, oh, what paint color are you doing? Or, you know, this and that, like, why are you putting the kitchen here instead of there? Like, I tell them all the time, like, you can tell me your opinions. I'd love to get your idea on like, what do you think this flip would look like? Because some of the people we work with, they've been investors in the past and now they're just doing, you know, passive income right now. So I'm open to communication, but like you said, at the end of the day, nobody's ever pushed us like, okay, that was a, you know, I don't like the kitchen there or something like that. That's always up to us.
Do you keep people, this is so interesting. And I keep going back and forth in my head. It's like, do you keep people in the deal for the life of, I guess this would be a question, one question for buy and hold, and then another question for a flip of like, how long do you keep people in the deal for? Like, do they invest X amount with you and then you give an X percent return and then they're done? Or do you say, hey, you're, for as long as we keep this property, I'll continue paying you X percent per month. Like, how do you guys specifically, I guess, put together your deals?
So honestly, it's just been like, even for our rentals that we had in Buffalo, we bought them with private money and then we just refinanced with banks. We just buy them for the amount of time, or we get the lenders for the amount of time that we're going to flip the property or rehab it, and plus the amount that it's going to take to either sell or refinance whatever we're doing. So it's just for like a short period of time. Now in our contract, it says 1 year, but I can pay it off, you know, as soon as I'm done with whatever my goal is.
Yeah, well, we're definitely careful with that. We try to use, and we're always going to use one lender for one project.
Right.
A lot of, some people like mixing it up, or let's say we're rehabbing a house and we have the money for a year and the rehab takes 4 months. Let's say 4 months to flip it and sell it. Certain people would try to use that money for the rest of the year because they have it on other projects. We would try to avoid that from the start, because we give that money back because we're not trying to mix any projects going on with any vendors.
Yeah, that's like robbing Mary to pay Paul. Like, you don't want to end up.
Exactly. That's what you have to be careful with, because once you gain the confidence from one lender, you need to be respectful of his money and give it back whenever you're done with it. Basically, that's how I see it.
Great. I'm wondering how you organize your systems when you're doing the rehabs. We're talking about funding. We're talking about marketing. It's great. We're touching on a lot of things. I think this is really helpful advice, even for Ryan and I, who have not got into the private money sector yet. We've bought really with our own money and it's going well, but I think that that's a really great way for you guys to scale. And we're going to look into it as well. But I'm curious, how do you keep these rehabs in line? You mentioned that you might be having two, you kind of know your threshold. If we do three at one time, it's too much. How do you keep everything buttoned up?
On my side, which is like a little bit, I get involved in the design side. It's obviously hard, right? There's no like cutthroat like line in between the two rehabs, but we try to be as organized as possible, especially when it comes to like our credit card. So we like to flip with our credit cards, which I don't really suggest it to everybody. You know, it takes a certain amount of risk. However, when it comes to that, you know, I just try to keep each credit card, for example, for each property. So if I'm having two, I try to sign one credit card for each property, just because it helps with my sanity too. And, you know, when I'm buying stuff, I know that I don't have to worry about, you know, mixing different transactions. But in terms of the rehab itself, we actually have set up a spreadsheet that just kind of outlines everything that a house might need at all times. And then whenever we have a property that needs maybe only half those things, you know, we'll just plug in whatever it needs and then go from there.
Yeah, I definitely did some work, because as you mentioned before, we turned this from a hobby to a money-making business, not just from the getting the deals, but also the rehab side.
Right.
So we created the list with all, as she said, all the numbers, the average numbers, for example, the kitchen remodel in the house, all those numbers are listed in a sheet. So when I walk through a property, I know exactly, got to add this, that, and I come up with my number. Also have a couple of sheets that I use for initial walkthrough through houses, and also managing subcontractors, because I've never hired a GC, but I just manage my subcontractors.
You are the GC, essentially.
Yeah. So I basically focus on subcontractors that specialize in one thing or two things. Like, I'm not going to use my drywall guy to be my plumber. Certain people try to do that, and that, I think that's where the projects slow down, and that's how they lose a lot of money.
It's very interesting. We've never heard this. I've never heard this before, and I think that it's just because we don't do rehabs. But one of the things is that, yet, but one of the things that I find really cool, so you have a spreadsheet that essentially lists all of the potential rehabs that might be needed in each area. And then you have a checklist ready. You're going, you're walking through and saying, well, this part of the rehab looks fine. We don't need to do this in this particular property. I think that's a really cool way. And I'm sure you're probably always adding to the list of things you haven't seen, right? Like, you know, but that's awesome. And it's proven going from zero to 500,000. Was that this past year that happened, 2020?
Yeah.
It's excellent. It's obviously.
I was nice enough to put it together for everybody. So it's called Flip Like a Bundle. And if you go to our website, Money Making Duo or my bio, it's available there.
You were nice enough to do that. Can you do me a favor and just remind our guests how old you each are and how long you've been in real estate?
So I'm 25 and we started 2 years ago.
And I'm 24. I started basically
year and a half ago.
That's insane. Like, obviously you've probably patted yourself on the back enough, or you should have, if not, because less than 2 years away, we've talked to people that have had the idea of getting into real estate for years, and we keep coming across like, okay, they read this book, they analyzed this many deals, and they just never do anything. And this analysis paralysis, which you've heard a million times, they haven't. It's awesome to hear two young people paving the way and showing that you can literally choose something that you're interested in, study it, and become essentially masters at it. I mean, you're on your way there. You're ripping us through a bunch of different like terms and numbers and just things that people are probably like, dude, they must be doing this forever. Like, you even built spreadsheets out and have them for free for other people to use. If you don't follow them, you better do it. And we're going to link all their information at the end of the show. I'm just very inspired. You guys are getting me ready to run through a brick wall over here.
I just want to say real quick. Yeah. So when I started in that research phase, I did study for about like 8 months, I'd say, before I actually bought my first property. And a lot of times, like you said, people are like, just, you know, just do it. But you also got to have a little bit or at least enough background to understand the process of buying or flipping or, you know, wholesaling, whatever your first strategy will be, to understand so that you don't go in and, you know, fail like 100% or like hardcore fail. Obviously, you're going to have failures and setbacks, but at least they're not like, you know, terrible to the point where like you never want to touch real estate again. Yeah.
If you're trying to get into real estate and anything in life, actually, yeah, and you wait till the situation is perfect, it's never going to happen. Honestly,
right. You'll pass away.
Yeah, she started two flips with no contractor, or she was a contractor. Sorry, but like that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's really important to mention that, you know, as you kind of go through this process, there is never going to be a perfect time to start. And we, Ryan and I, always tell people that there, you need that learning curve, right? You need to learn what you don't know. But I think that as long as your first deal doesn't crush you, you're going to lose at some point anyway. It just can't be your first. If your first deal crushes you so much, it puts you down $50,000 and you can't get out of the hole, then you may look at real estate in a different way, but you're going to make mistakes along the way. We've made them already. But I think that's a good time frame, RV. I like to say a year to 18 months, but it really depends like what you're studying, and it's different for everybody. For sure.
Absolutely. And let me tell you, our first property surprisingly did not scare us away. I feel like I bought the worst property out there because I had to replace two of the biggest foundation walls for the house, which were like 35 feet long and like 8 feet high. So that was like quite a project we got ourselves into.
We definitely didn't wait at a perfect house. Definitely did not wait.
Well, let's just talk about that real quick. What kind of profit did you make on your first deal? I think it's important for, and even if you broke even, that's like, I still think that's a win. Like you did all this.
I literally just broke even, which is what I was happy about. Mm-hmm. After what I got myself into.
Great. And that didn't push you away. That you said, okay, I know what I did. I know what I can do better. And then you did it better the next time. It's awesome.
For sure. And I mean, it was such a big project that I was like, you know, if I could survive this project, I doubt anything else is going to be this hard. So I feel like I took the worst one out of the way first.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. Let's talk a little bit. Or Rye, did you have something quick? I saw that you wanted to.
I'm just intrigued in this, you know, it's interesting. So you're down in Nashville now and you were in Buffalo, New York. So can you just talk about why maybe it's just a personal lifestyle change, but why did you guys decide to move down to Nashville as opposed to staying and investing in Buffalo?
Let me start by saying it was never the plan to move to Nashville. I'm just being honest.
Are you a Bills Mafia, by the way? Are we talking?
Sure. Definitely. Okay.
That's why I knew I liked you. That's cool.
Yeah. So honestly, like he said, it was never planned. I came to visit here in September of like 2019 with my brother. It was his birthday. So I kind of gave him like a surprise birthday trip. And when I came here, the real estate, there was like things going on all the time, like building here, building there, like lots. And it was like new construction everywhere. So I called Dave and I was like, Dave, we got to move here. Like, I don't know the market. I don't know anything or anybody here, but this is crazy. Like, I'm seeing things on every single corner being built. And I was like, we're moving. I decided already.
Yeah, she bought a house and told me we're moving.
This is becoming too much of a pattern here, Dave. You got to come on here, bro. That's good.
At this point, he started to trust me a little bit when I say, you know, we got to do something.
That's incredible for you to pick up. I mean, the excuses go out the window when you make a decision to say, this is where the money is. This is where we can build our business. And you pick up and you go there. And for anybody who's sitting in a building in New York City or in San Francisco saying that my area is too expensive, I can't get into real estate. Well, one, you don't have to move there, right? You can invest long distance, but there are areas that you can invest in. And for RV and Dave to say, we're going to go pick up and we're going to move, it really just shows that you're in this for the long haul and you're serious about it. And that's, you know, part of the reason why you're successful.
Honestly, we hear a lot of times where people are exactly like you said, like, oh, my market's too expensive or my market is too small. I can't do much here. Well, what's holding you back from like either moving or starting somewhere else? Well, you know, I got family, this and that. It's like the excuses that people put up front to justify themselves that's why they're not doing it. So I think a lot of people lose a lot of opportunities by staying small and just kind of convincing themselves that with those excuses that they give.
Great. I want to talk about your, Rye mentioned part of your why, like why did you move to Nashville? Mm-hmm. But I want to talk more holistically, like your why of why you're even, why real estate, why you're even doing this. Our show is a lot about financial independence, and Ryan and I have chose real estate as our means to get there. I'm curious, mm-hmm. doing flips, is this a business that you're trying to reach financial freedom at one point? Or are you saying, I want to do this as a business for as long as I can? Like, what are your future goals and what's your why behind all of this?
Yeah, I'll say mine and then they can, mm-hmm. can say his. So honestly, I grew up in middle-class family, like most of us, you know, I wasn't suffering for eating or, you know, I always had food and house to live in, but it was always that to that point where like, oh, we can't do this because we don't have enough money, or we can't go to this trip because it's too expensive. So to me, like I was growing up with that and I'm always thinking like, how can we just get past this like too expensive part? So ever since I was little, I was like, you know, I got to do something to either get myself or my family out of this. And when I first started, you know, researching real estate, I saw a lot of success stories, how this was possible for like average people like us and not, you know, some lucky dude or some millionaire that started with millions. So that was my why, you know, just to get started. Like you said, financial freedom. We love to travel. We'd like to turn this into like a business where we, it doesn't require us to be there, where we can probably manage it anywhere we'd want to, you know, either travel or live. But yeah, that was my main why.
Yeah, I have two main whys, I would say. My whys change from time to time. I can be honest, sometimes I evaluate it, but the main reason I'm doing this is because for my whole life, since I was 15, I saw my parents wake up every morning to go to work to the 9-to-5s and work the tails off to provide me whatever they could buy me basically at that time. And just to give you an example, that this month I called my parents up and I told them, hey, you guys can come to the U.S. because they still live in Suriname. That's my home country. You guys can come to the U.S. on my expense. Like, don't worry about the tickets. Don't worry about the food. Don't worry about the hotels. And that's I think, the main reason why I'm doing it, to give my parents what they deserve for raising me this well. The second why, some might disagree, but materialistic things kind of attract me and motivate me to do better. Mm-hmm. When I was younger, I couldn't buy a lot of things because my parents told me you have to spend this money a different way. And real estate gives you the opportunity to take care of your family, but also take care of yourself and spoil yourself a little bit.
First of all, I love that. And the reason why I do is because I think that there's a stigma in the FI community that like materialistic things are bad, and they're not bad because it's all about how you perceive. Like, it's your life. You know what I mean? You guys are doing exactly what you want to do. I am like putting off buying a really nice car because I want to buy it with my passive income. But like, that's what it's all about. If that's what you want, like, I think it's great.
I mean, you guys mentioned it about financial independence, but I would say I just want to get rich. Like, a lot of people in the FI world are scared to say, like, I want to get rich. And I would say it every day. I'll tell people all the time, I'm going to be a millionaire. I don't know about you guys. Financial independence, that's great. But yep. I'm going to be a millionaire.
Great.
Funny that I have a couple coming up here. But first one, I just love that we want to take care of your family, but you got to spoil yourself too. Like, there's things that you see and you're like, I need to have that. I might not have it now, but I'm going to have that. What is that thing for you, Dave? Is it a whip? Like, are we talking like a yacht? What are we talking? Plane?
Actually, I'm still like looking, to be honest. One thing I definitely want is a Range Rover. I don't care. Like, I've been talking to a couple of guys and they're like, yeah, Range Rover, the maintenance is bad. I'm like, I still want one.
You got to fill that void. It's funny. You're not going to probably be happy until you have that car. Just even maybe till you can afford. Well, you can't now. I assume, you know, I mean, nice deal you did the other day.
I'll be honest, we could probably afford it, but
we're just choosing.
But I'm choosing wisely to wait till I can actually say I can afford a Range Rover. No doubt, I can pay it off cash. Yes. No, the maintenance.
Yeah. Love for that. Me, it's a G-Wagon, by the way.
Okay. There we go. Love it. I'm a car guy, so I'm all in on both of us. All right. Well, that brings us to the portion of our show we like to call the core four. And this is going to be similar to what we just asked, kind of personal questions. And just, we'd love to get both your thoughts. You can chime in, whoever wants to start, but we'll keep it easy for the first one. And just, what is your favorite book? That could be business related, real estate related, but just anything that you know, you think our listeners would take and could use in their life?
Honestly, there's so many great books out there and I hate to just pick one. But I'd probably just go with the E-Myth, the real estate investing one, like the focused one, just because that really like impacted my journey when I first started to like understand a lot of things, not only in real estate, but also how to set it up as a business instead of just like kind of going and doing things.
I knew this question was coming, but I'm not a reader. I'm trying to be a listener, but I'm not a reader. But one book I read and she gave it to me that till this day I enjoy reading is Who Moved My Cheese?
Who Ate My Cheese?
Yeah. It's a small book, but
it you read hits, in like 2 hours.
It hits on every point.
That's my dad's favorite book. That's funny. It's fun. I love it. That's not, like, who moved? Yeah, who stole my cheese or who moved my cheese? It's one of the two. I gotta find it. Well, I'm gonna research it while you're answering.
Pull it up.
Yeah, it has a little mouse on it with the cheese. No, it's great. It's basically just it's honestly a dumbed down version. I don't want to say dumbed down, but dumbed down version of Rich Dad Poor Dad, kind of to me. It was like my intro to that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Number two.
Oh,
Corey, you're up.
We're going back and forth. All right. Let's see. So what's the biggest mistake you've made along your journey and how have you learned from it?
We've learned a lot. And I think every single one of them has been like taught us something different.
I'll start. I'll go with contractors. I messed up a lot, and that's why I wanted to put it out for everybody to actually not have to make the mistakes that I made. But contractors definitely took advantage of us in our first two flips, and because I don't know, it's just because I think they smelled it that hey, these are new investors.
Yep.
I would say contract. Learning from my mistakes from contractors. That's the one.
I guess for me then would be to just not overpay for deals because I've definitely done that before. And honestly, even in the wholesaling side, like I mentioned, like two of my best deals, but I had deals where I made like $3,000 wholesaling because I messed up on my numbers. So I think one of those things is to not get too excited about getting a deal under contract to the point where you can't move it.
Perfect. Perfect. Go ahead, Ry.
So this one kind of goes back to what we were talking about previously and involves money. So how much money do you both feel you need to be happy? And I know money doesn't always drive happiness, but it's interesting to hear your thoughts on, okay, if I have this amount, I'm good.
That's funny. We actually were at a type of mastermind where, you know, they told us, think about what your perfect amount of money is monthly. And we both surprised each other because we didn't know we had such high expectations.
So people in the room were like, they were reading out loud. Everybody was going to take a turn. And somebody was, 50K. I'm like,
okay. Yeah, really?
And somebody was like, 100K. I'm in an RV. Dave, 400?
A month? 400K?
A month.
And everybody started clapping. I'm like, wow.
That's awesome. Hell yeah.
I think that would be like our dream life, mm-hmm. you know, but honestly, even like 20, 30K for us right now, obviously we wouldn't want to have that monthly.
Yeah. Awesome. I'm just looking down at my core four here and we have 5 questions written down. Like who, like, what are we doing? But let's
ask. I'm going to ask that other one after. Don't worry. You skip it for now though.
Okay. So, this is a question we've got recently as we've been starting to read some books because we've been learning about putting the right people in the right place. So who is your who for this year? And how did meeting them propel your business? And I guess what I'm asking is who's an important person that you have developed a relationship with this year?
A spin on this too, essentially is like, if you haven't met this person yet, who is this who that if you met them, you know, it for sure would propel your business to the next level. And you're like, that's
who you're looking for. Yeah, exactly.
So for me it was Ryan Dossey. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with him. He's actually one of my mentors as well. And I had the chance to meet him in July. It definitely like game changer on my life and personal like business as well. Definitely just like pushed me to keep going and get to the level of, you know, 500,000 a year. Because I don't think I would have done that, you know, by myself. Helped me a lot through like business system wise. So he was definitely my person this year in terms of scaling and stuff like that.
For me, I would say, meeting, Max Maxwell, in December in 2020, and not just like meeting, talk to him. Like I spent about 2 days with him, just talking about life, and kind of what blew my mind was just like his vision. Like you see certain business people and they're successful, but just to be close to them and see their vision and the way they think of business and what they want to achieve and how they're going to achieve it is just mind blowing.
That's great. Everyone needs a great mentor. It's cool that the two of you have found some people that are there to lead you down the path. So
how'd you put yourselves in the same room with each of these people? I think that's intriguing for people that have someone that they're looking up to right now.
Yeah. So honestly, one of the ways I did it with Ryan, I paid for him. He's my mentor, as I said. So I paid for his mentorship, and you know, when he did like a new person type mastermind, I was more than happy to join and pay. And I think a stigma that's out there that I hear a lot of times is people saying, no, why are you paying him? You know, he's just taking your money. Some people see it that way, but you know, the amount I paid him compared to the amount my business made, like, you know, through him mentoring me is so worth it. You know, I would pay double, triple that to get to the point where I did. So
that's interesting. My question would be, would you have made this deal that you closed today that you netted about 100K? Would that be in your wheelhouse or even be close to what you had if you had not met Ryan?
Honestly, I don't think so, because everything that like he taught me and did with me, like kind of put me in the position to be reached out to for that deal. So I don't think I would have. I mean, maybe, you know, who knows? We'll never know. But
your investment paid off. That's
right. Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent.
Great.
I actually met Max through a friend of mine. His name is Jose Soto. He reached out. He has about 30K followers on TikTok, and he reached out to Max, and Max was in Nashville, so he met up with him and invited me. So I was just like the third wheel, basically. But that's basically how I spent 2 days with him through social. We met through social media, basically.
That's great. So the last segment of our show is called The Last Drop, and we typically ask, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give your younger self? And the two of you have only been doing this for a couple of years, but I'm sure you'll have some advice that you give your younger self. And it doesn't even have to be involved in real estate, just in general.
Right. Honestly, for me, is to just trust myself more and be consistent in what I'm doing. Even in the beginning, I was scared to like take a step. I feel like I needed somebody with me to take the step with me, because if I was going to fail, at least I wasn't going to be alone. But it so happened that we succeeded. So if I were to go back, you know, I'd say, you know, trust yourself in what you're doing and trust your abilities and your skills.
Mine would be towards real estate, and it's actually towards mentorship. I would say don't be scared to pick a mentor, but make sure you can relate to your mentor. How he has gone to his, from where he was to where he is now, make sure you can relate to that, so you feel more comfortable picking a mentor that way. Definitely.
It's amazing. I like that. So I'll be the first to say it. Amazing episode. We've learned a lot from both of you. I think you're absolutely killing it for being two years in the game. If people hear this episode and they're intrigued and they want to at least download the sheets you put together to get some free game, where can they find you? Feel free to plug your brand, website, social media. We want people to get in touch with you should they desire.
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. It's arvi.karkanji, CARKANJI.
And mine is dave.arlaud. You can also find us on our website is moneymakingduo.com.
Thank you so much. I think this episode is for anybody who feels like they might not have a way into real estate. You created your way, and neither of you came from the real estate investing game. So meaning from your family. So the fact that you dove in and you're not even 25 or 25 is a way for whether you're 15, 18, 34, 48, 70, you know, there's a way in as long as you kind of navigate those waters. So we want to thank you so much for coming on. We really, really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, guys, for having us.